is Moshe Bieberfeld. I initially was from Washington Heights. I learned in San Sepa, the high school. After high school, I went to Philadelphia for a year. And I had a brother-in-law who was a Talmid Muvik of Rav Aaron Zitzel in Lakewood. And through that connection, I landed at Rav Yosef Luria.
Uh-huh.
And through that connection, you know, I landed up in Lakewood. Probably also through the Philadelphia connection.
Who's the Rebbe in Philadelphia?
Well, I basically learned only by Rav Elgin.
Uh-huh.
I was 4 years post high school. So I went, at that time in Philadelphia, there was four high school classes and two base medrash classes, one with Shmuel and one with Elgin.
What year was that?
This was, I can remember the English date, it was 1959.
Uh-huh.
And in 1960, I went to Lakewood.
What was the experience of going there?
So basically, you know, I was relatively young, and Lakewood to me was like, you know, a mokum Torah for the Gedolei Yisrael, a future Gedolei Yisrael. And in fact, you know, some of the people that were there with me, you know, who I know were close to the Rosh Hashiva, people like Rabbi Yankel Schiff, people like Meir Hershkowitz, Meir Hotstein, Moshe Hirsch, you know, all Chaim Epstein, Meir Hotstein. These are people that were there. Havim Chaim Lachaim, there was a fellow that once went with Moshe Khan. He then became a Rosh Hashiva in Denver. By then he was a Mifter in a young age. And, you know, to me, just the whole yeshiva at that point, like there was 100 people in the whole yeshiva. 100 between Bochum and Yungalite, mostly Yungalite.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one building in the yeshiva, and with today the major campuses, there was basically a dining room hall and a couple of dormitory rooms. I remember, like that, I was in a room together with Chaim Bressler, who was now Rosh Hashiva in Scranton, and two or three other people, mamash on the same floor with Rosh Hashiva, who had his own room over there. I'll tell you one, you know, I had a tremendous zechia because I was friendly with a fellow in the name of Butch Stefanski. I can remember his name. But he had the keys to the car, yeshiva car, and he needed Bochum that would take Rosh Hashiva in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was zeicher to be able on, I guess, numerous occasions, drive the Rosh Hashiva into Borough Park, and stay with him, basically from Monday through Thursday, and then driving back to yeshiva. Unfortunately, you know, Rosh Hashiva Bechlal didn't like to talk to the driver when they were driving, and I really didn't feel that I was in any madrega to be able to have a conversation with Rosh Hashiva. I mean, I'm sure we spoke something, and he asked me something, but certainly we didn't talk in learning, which is chaval, although I'm not sure I was on the madrega to be able to do that. But I do remember, in that way, I sort of got somewhat close to Rosh Hashiva. And certain things stand out in my mind, you know, when I envision the Rosh Hashiva. First of all, at that time I think he gave a shiur basically, I think, on the Thursday night and on a Shabbos morning, maybe Sunday. But, you know, just the picture of the Rosh Hashiva's small stature standing on the stage in front of his little shtender with his two hands, you know, fisted, and saying over his shiur in the Gemara, which was woven, you know, in so many ways through Shas, and for a Rambam, for example, you know, way beyond, you know, my Havon at that time, I remember going to Mayor Hartstein, who said a Chazor Sashia. I was amazed that these people were able to, right after this unbelievable Shia, to be able to just repeat it, you know, incompletely. But that scene of seeing the Rosh Hashiva standing there, and so I guess in my mind the picture was that I can't imagine there would be room for anything else in his head at that moment, or in his heart at that moment, other than saying that Shia. It was so all-consuming of him. And of course, it mesmerized, at least me, watching it. You know, I'm sure the other people who are on a higher madrigal and learning than I was were mesmerized by the Torah. I was mesmerized by watching just the Rosh Hashiva in action. But, you know, given that relationship with him, there was a couple of very interesting situations that I had with Rosh Hashiva. Number one, being somewhat innocent in being able to think that I have a relationship with a Rosh Hashiva like that, as I mentioned, I was on the same dormitory floor with him. I decided one Erev Shabbos to knock on his door and ask him whether I could polish his shoes for Shabbos. He sort of smiled. And Rosh Hashiva had these shoes that were laced halfway, and then halfway they were like boots type shoes, that they would like crisscross ties on a long round little metal thing. And he let me untie his shoes, take them off. I would take them into my room. I would shine them. This was Erev Shabbos. I would shine them, bring it back to him, and put it on his feet. So like, I mean, this was going on midday Erev Shabbos. On an ongoing basis. Anyway, that was a midday Shabbos for Shabbos experience, which, you know, was like really amazing. Then I remember also, you know, from the contrast between Rosh Hashiva standing on the stage, saying this sheer with such tremendous, you know, involvement and enthusiasm, and then on Friday night he would eat with the boys in the dining room, and I would, you know, he would, you know, sit with us. I don't know if he would talk much, I can remember, but, you know, he chose to sit Friday night with the Bachim and eat, because the young Leibnistam went away then, but the Bachim was there, and we would, actually sit and eat together, and it was like, you know, such an amazing thing. So I would have a chance to drive him to Borough Park. Another Maisa that I remember that, like, it stays with me for so long, and I've repeated it several times to people because it's hard to imagine. But, you know, I would drop him off on 47th and 15th Avenue by his apartment. It was sort of the dining room where we sat. It was like a Chatzmoy office, it was a Lakewood office. Everything was going on over there. And I would stay with him until he told me that I should leave and come back, you know, the next day or later on, take him someplace wherever he had to go. But I remember one time just standing there, and he was learning a Gemara, and he had his right hand on the Gemara and his left hand on a Tosfos. And also, just, I know he's pointing to Tosfos, and he got a call from London, and he was on the phone, I would say, can't say sure, but Erich, close to an hour, speaking on the phone. His finger didn't leave that Tosfos, and when he hung up, he just like kind of the finger continued from that place where he was up to. Again, this was what, you know, for me it was that, like, at that point it was like such an amazing thing. First of all, that he, that's an hour phone call, and concentrate on that and just go right back into it. Another thing that he was really, really amazing. But I think, you know, to me, the idea that I had a link with a Rav Aaron who really, you know, I would say, I could have just as well been in Europe, you know, learning. It happened to be he was here and I was here. But it was like what I imagine the European yeshivas were like. And I think, you know, to me, don't even know if I'm allowed to say this, but to me the gap, I think the gap between with Aaron Zitzel and let's say the door before that, with Chaim Oizer and these people, is not as great as the gap that exists today between what people my age who saw the Rav Aarons and the Rav Moshes, the Rav Yaakov, the Rav Ulamans of the world, and today, you know, the gap is so great, especially in the United States, that it's a frightening thought. So for maybe for the younger people to whom, you know, they relate to Rav Aarons and Rav Yaakov today, to me it seems like this gap is much greater than any gap in history before. It's a frightening thing, you know, to not have people like that around to make these world decisions, especially in the United States. So, actually, since over the time I had developed a relationship with a yeshiva, actually one more thing I do remember, besides driving him, since I had come from Philadelphia, he used to give an annual shiur in Yeshiva in Philadelphia. So I was asked to accompany him, but we went by train, which I don't understand exactly why, I don't remember why we didn't take him by car, but we went by train. And I remember that I sat in an aisle seat, and he sat in an aisle seat, you know, across the aisle, one in front of me, so there was no other seats available. And I had with me a drush v'chiddush Rabbi Kivega. So I had with me, I don't know if he had any sperm with him, but he asked to have my drush v'chiddush Rabbi Kivega. And I was watching him, and it was also an amazing sight. You know, he was sitting there, he would put his thumb into, like into a closed space, but he would open it. And wherever it opened, he thought he would learn that. And then when he would close it again and do it again, as if, like, you know, wherever that drush v'chiddush opened up to, he was able to learn it, you know, and this is the drush v'chiddush Rabbi Kivega, you know. So that was another, you know, I know that these things obviously made such an impression on me, you know, as a 20, 21-year-old, that the value that, you know, the little shiva was, to, you know, to be able to do something like that, you know, all over Shas, to just open up the drush v'chiddush Rabbi Kivega and learn it. Anyway, towards the end of my stay in Lakewood, two other, I think, very interesting situations happened. One was, I was learning Hakka with this with Moshe Khan of Rosh Hashanah in the evening. The yeshiva had in the back of one of its halls over there a closed sifriya, a closed library. It gets some more room that they just want anybody to use. And Moshe Khan and I were looking through it, you know, one night, and I picked out a Pnei Yeshua. I opened it up, and on the Sharbla of the Pnei Yeshua, like, there was a lot of writing on it, and one place was written Akiva Gimli. Okay. And that hit me, you know, that's where the Kiva used to sign his name that way. So I thought to myself, you know, I wonder if this is Rabbi Kivega's Pnei Yeshua. So my family, my uncles, and I, you know, my mother, and my uncles were Schreibers, they're Dur, the Achadur from some side. You know, relatives, they were well-to-do people. So I once went to ask them, you know, would they want to buy this? So I think they offered, this was 1960. They offered something like $5,000 or $10,000. I don't remember. It was a Hoin Rav in those days, yeah. I guess, for the yeshiva. So I presented it to the Rosh Yeshiva. That's an opportunity for the yeshiva to have some money. The yeshiva thought maybe for 30 seconds, not longer. And he said, no, it will be a bigger schus for the Ego, the Pnei Yeshua, that the Sefer should be here in the yeshiva, we should learn from it, then it should some be in a museum type, in a library, in some place of that sort. That also made, I mean, that $10,000 for a shiva in those days would have been tremendous oil off his back. But, you know, the cheshbon was, this is the right thing to do. Anyway, by The last thing that I do remember is that I was ready to leave the yeshiva, and it was I think it's in February or March of that year. I told Rav Schnez itself that, you know, that in the summer I'm going to be leaving early to go to camp, and then I'm going to be leaving. And he said, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva really does not want people to go to camp. To me, it was very important. I was in camp life all my life, and I felt I was, you know, I was a head counselor, I was accomplishing things. It was very important to me. And I basically said, look, I really want to go. And I think, to the best of my recollection, he spoke to Rosh Yeshiva, and they both agreed that really, it's better I should not. Anyway, I was leaving anyway, so I thought, like, you know, instead of leaving I'm going to leave earlier, you know, to go to camp. Anyway, I got a message that she was in New York, and that he'd like to see me in his apartment, which I was very familiar with, being there with him so many times, that he'd like to see me. So I went up to the apartment, and she called me in, and he says, I hear you're leaving. I said, yeah, my father, you know, I'm going to be going to the Chaim Berlin Kollel. I'm, you know, I'll be learning most of the day, and I'm going to be going to college in the evening. So he looked at me and said, you're going to college? I said, yeah, but I'm only going to go 2 nights a week. So he said, 2 nights a week? You're never going to get finished. He sort of smiled. I said, yeah, but I want to learn. And so, yeah, I'm going to be learning two storim, and I'm going to be going in the evening. So he looked at me, and sort of like a little smile came over his face, and he said to me, you know what? I don't remember the exact lotion, I don't know if he called me Moshe or what he called me, but he said to me, you know, if you come back to yeshiva, I'll even let you go to camp. You know, I felt like melting, because, you know, to hear from the Godel HaDor about little me and his having in mind that it would make a difference, maybe, that if I came back to yeshiva, I'll be able to go to camp, you know, to me was such a godless. You know, for a moment I made up my mind, you know what, I'm going to show back, I'll come back to yeshiva Friday night, I'm going to come around where everybody comes and says good Shabbos to him, and he'll see me there, that I listened to him. But, you know, obviously I didn't do that, and I did go to Chaim Berlin Kollel, and I continued that way. But, you know, these were, you know, when my kids were in Lakewood, when I frequent Lakewood, whenever my nieces and nephews are there, and I walk by the place where the yeshiva was, you know, those memories are immensely important to me. And I really think, I know that although it was 1 year, no question in my mind, that year made me, if I can say it that way, although I've been a professional for the last 30 years, I think I always viewed myself as a yeshiva man that is working, rather than a working man that learns a little bit. And I think that's, you know, having had that experience, you know, in such a Malkum Torah, that's what I think it led to me.
How did it influence your family that you had that background?
Well, yeah. Well, let me just say this to you, that, you know, I have Baruch Hashem, my older son is a Rebbe in Yeshiva in Silver Spring. My middle son learned in Lakewood and is now a Rosh Kollel in the Philadelphia Community Kollel, which is a sort of Lakewood branch Kollel. And I think that the question of my children choosing to stay in learning and in chinuch and non-college, it didn't faze me at all. In fact, I see that as a schus for me, rather than vice versa. And both of my sons-in-law, you know, although they're working, are not college people. I'm not making a value judgment on that, but certainly in terms it was not super important to me that my kids should go to college. It's really more important to me that, you know, that the Torah homes, which Baruch Hashem they are. That's really
good. So we can attribute this whole idea of a Torah home as it is today to the influence of Rabban to a great extent.
I think that certainly was the first great influence that I had. I mean, certainly my experience with the Fitness itself left impressions on me as well. But I think the concept of that's really, one would have to say, there's almost no double to Lakewood. I mean, Lakewood is unique, and no one can argue with that. It's unique, and having been part of that system, I think that left in me that piece of uniqueness that I think just telling stories over to the kids over the years influenced them. It made them feel that same way.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Biberfeld. Thank you very much.